is Ben.
And my name's Andrew.
And we are your hosts of the Too Vague podcast this week. One word, two hosts, stories, trivia, and video games. Or video games. Maybe I should say video games.
Video games.
That'll be the change.
Yes.
Joining me in studio for this exciting word, and it's exciting because, I don't know, it seems to be one of those words that just kind of came out of left field, but it's interesting.
I don't know why it came out to me also. Why did this word jump in my head? It's a word that I like.
Does it have anything to do with what's going on with you recently? Is there kind of an association to something that's happening in your life right now that maybe you think this word popped in your head? I mean, what's going on with you?
Well, you know what? At my workplace, we just finished a union bargaining thing. I might have mentioned it before. So we got our contract voted on.
Uh-huh.
And now we just need the school board to approve it, but they will, because why won't they? But then, of course, the fallout is that, next year we're going to have to do staff cuts.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's just budget stuff, but it's the ridiculousness of working in the public sector.
Okay, but it seems like it's a cycle, yes?
Yeah, it's like a cycle. It's like, yes, we'll give you more money, but also not. Also, we'll give you more work because we'll cut staff. So anyway, I made an interesting decision.
Do you want to hold on to that for later episodes, or do you want to just...
My interesting decision? Sure. We can save that. Keep that in the pocket of...
It's a cliffhanger. It's a
cliffhanger. I got a good word idea for that one. We'll talk about that later. It'll be great.
That's cool, too. Yeah.
I'll text you the word.
Awesome.
And if any of the listeners out there have... able to hack my phone, they'll be able to know what I'm talking about.
But yeah, I don't think the skill level of my one listener is that.
You don't think Anora's got that
mad hacking skills? No. Has baby done anything exciting and new?
Baby has been pooping a lot the last couple of days.
That's
not new.
That's right.
It's a little exciting in the midst of it.
The compost pile is excited. Maybe.
No, she's starting to roll over a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's right on track, doing smiling and giggling, making me feel like she likes me. So that's good.
that's good
she
stuff.
She smiles real big when it's good stuff. Getting bigger.
Having a baby at this point in time is probably much better than the waking up in the middle of the night stage, is my guess.
They're still waking up in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she kind of regressed a little on that front, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. She's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. Yeah. We could try different strategies, but I think what we're trying is to just go with the flow. Because she doesn't like wake fully up. She just gets kind of hungry in the middle of the night, and then we do this thing they call dream feeding, which is like you try to feed her while you're still asleep. And
is that an actual thing?
Dream feeding?
Or is it just something that you just came up with?
No, actually, that's somebody else came up with it. But it's it's like you just like keep the lights low. You feed the baby without much disruption. No, don't bother with a diaper change. Just
feed and
get some food in there and hope the baby falls asleep again. Put it back in the...
Okay.
Back in the bed.
All right. Dream feeding. Yeah. That's a new
dream
one.
Dream feeding.
Okay.
Dream feeder. Yeah.
Gonna feed me through the night. Anyway.
Yeah. It works. It works. Yeah.
On my front, what I've been doing.
Your front. Yeah, I was going to ask, what have you been doing?
I've been playing a game that I talked about with your eldest daughter on the last show.
That's right. I'm excited to hear the previous episode, which will hopefully come out before this episode.
Yes. Yes, that is the plan.
So by the time you hear this episode, I'll have heard that episode. It's like we're time traveling.
It's sort of, it's time traveling.
It's like low budget time travel.
Right. Very low budget.
I'm in the future from that past.
The game that I'm talking about, and I don't know if you took a look at this online while I was telling you about it. I think I may have sent you a clip. But the game is Trombone Champ.
Trombone Champ. You showed me a bunch of like screenshots. Trombone Champ.
Yes, playing a lot of great trombone music on the Trombone Champ.
Yeah.
So I was going to do a little mini review before we get into the word, which this week is, we kind of alluded to it, but let me just say it.
Yeah.
Is the word equivocate.
Equivocate, yes.
Equivocate is our word this week. How am I going to tie it to video games? I still have no idea, but we'll figure it out.
We'll just fake it.
Yeah, fake it till we make it.
Yeah.
It seems to work with some politicians.
It really does.
The game, Trombone Champ. You and I talked about this on the review show, how I was going to try and do these in between snack food tastings.
Exactly.
Let me review my formula, which is the audio visuals plus the game mechanics plus the story and narrative equals a video game experience. And my sort of weights, 20% for audio visuals, 35% for game mechanics, and 45% for story and narrative.
Yeah, and then you get the square root of the hypotenuse.
No, there's no... There's
that's
no,
not a thing.
There's no... No.
You don't take the square root of the hypotenuse.
There's actually a lot of very, very complex differential equations in the background that I didn't want to... Matrices and things, but no.
You get too much math, people just tune out. Yeah.
I think that the three percentages that add up to 100% is good enough for math. I
mean, that's pretty simple. That's straightforward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so surprise, surprise. Trombone Champ is a rhythm game.
Rhythm game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the rhythm game? I mean, I know you were a big Dance Dance Revolution guy back in the day.
DDR. Yeah. Yeah. DDR is pretty good.
You jump over the back. Breakdance on the game pads or whatever.
I was more into like the sing it ones, you know.
Okay.
The karaoke style games. I could do
those. Oh, I gotcha. Did you ever play the Rock Band or anything like that, or just the
Rock Band? I didn't play the Rock Band, but there was like the sing it ones and something else. I forgot what the name of the stinking game was, but one was like a Disney one.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some rhythm involved with the singing.
Yeah.
As well as singing. But yeah,
she said with the Wii, she was into the dance ones. There was but then also there was the singing ones. And the Rock Band has a part where you actually can have a microphone so you can sing. But
oh yeah,
I usually whenever I play Rock Band on my PlayStation 4, it's usually just bass guitar and lead guitar. But you are familiar with the concept of the.
Yeah.
Rhythm game.
Yeah.
So you know all the basics. But Trombone Champ is a rhythm game developed by Holy Wow Studios, the director of the game, who is also basically the lead designer, Dan Vecchietto. He came up with this idea when rhythm games were starting to get popular in the arcades, the Dance Dance Revolution era. We would all come up with ideas for silly versions like tuba. Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this idea for the trombone and a special trombone controller, which he just said as a joke. But
yeah.
Then he started thinking about the actual slide mechanics and how he could do that and came up with a very simple, easy way. So Trombone Champ was born from that. It came out originally for the PC in 2022, and then they brought it to the Mac in January of 2023, which is what I played it on, the Mac.
Okay.
And then it was released on the Nintendo Switch September 14th. And I think Star picked it up. I convinced her to pick it up. So
I'll have to talk to her about that.
Yeah, because apparently with the Switch, they have some new mechanics as far as controlling the trombone that are different than, you know, because the Switch has a unique control scheme, right? It's got the Joy-Cons and they can do all sorts of things like detect distances. But I am doing my review on the Mac version. We'll start with the audio visuals and then maybe it makes more sense to start with the story narrative because that gives you kind of the, you know what I mean? When I do this thing, maybe I start with the story and narrative.
Maybe. Let's see.
Let me start with that. Okay. So we'll start with the story and narrative, the premise, if you will.
What's the premise of the narrative?
You are someone who's going on a quest to become the trombone champ by tooting your trombone, learning about and pledging allegiance to baboons, collecting and trading trombone champ cards, meeting strange characters, and laughing a lot. That's basically my summary of the story and narrative.
Oh, yeah. They've got some cool songs on there.
Yeah, they do. Here. Yeah. At the time of this podcast, they had about 60 songs.
Yeah, the list of songs here, it's got...
I think there is a modding community because there are people who have their own customizable graphics of certain songs, and I don't know if some of those are actually made, like someone made the song or did a graphic that shows like as a joke, like the background stuff or whatever while you're playing it.
Gosh.
But anyway.
One of the songs is Funiculi Funicula, written to commemorate the opening of the first funicular railway on Mount Vesuvius.
Huh?
The song about a to celebrate a funicular railway.
Yeah. I mean, they're actual song.
That's nerdy.
Songwriters and it's that's the wonderful thing about the story and narrative in this game. It is wonderfully nerdy and funny.
Yeah.
They take a lot of liberties with just having fun with the whole concept.
Well, it looks like a lot of fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. The audio visuals, let me just say, character models, the UI, the song selection, which we touched on briefly there, it looks pretty much like what you would see on a Dance Dance Revolution or some sort of arcade machine like that. It is solid.
That's important.
And the background animations, I think that's like a lot of these music games, things are going on in the background. Those are very creative and funny too. As you're tooting, they call playing the trombone tooting. And then they also call the person who plays the trombone the tromboner, which is also pretty funny.
The tromboner. I feel like that is not the
intended. Yeah. Audio visuals encompass also this card collection dynamic, which they use to kind of poke fun at your EA sports games, the microtransaction stuff where you have all the cards for all the different players and so on and so forth. But they have fun with that. The graphics are great on those cards. It's just so goofy and fun. I mean, they tied it all together. It feels just like a rhythm game. It is a rhythm game, but I mean, they took all the elements of a rhythm game and applied it to a trombone in a way. It's just nearly perfect in my book. So
it's like the perfect trombone game.
Exactly. It's probably the only trombone game, but
it doesn't matter if it's the only one. If it's perfect.
Yeah.
No, but nobody needs to make another one.
It's not doing anything really innovating, but they're taking all these concepts and doing it in such a solid way that it just feels just nostalgic and wonderful. Game mechanics. You choose your tromboner. You choose your trombone style, you choose your sound scheme, and then after the loading screen where it tells you a little fake fact about trombones, you are sent to that song selection UI, which is amazing. You pick one of the songs, and it's time to toot. So on the MacBook, it's just one key on the keyboard to do the actual blowing into the trombone.
Oh, okay.
And then you would follow the path with your trackpad or your mouse, depending on what you're using. I had to adjust the mouse sensitivity so I didn't have to lift and put my finger back.
Oh, no. You don't want to do that.
Other than that, it was perfect. As you play the songs, you follow the notes and prompts as they scroll from the right with key presses, mouse movements. And then at the end, you are ranked. Well, you're rated for each, like how you connect these different notes together, with perfectos, okays, nices, mazz, and nasties. Those are the categories. You've got a champ meter where you string notes together. You get a certain bonus multiplier as long as you do well connecting those things.
Oh boy, I'm just sorry. I saw a thing in the description of the gameplay, which the tromboner cards, if you got an unwanted or duplicate card, it can be transformed into a turd.
Yes, exactly. I was just about to get to that.
I was like, wow.
You can buy your cards with the two coins you win from playing the songs. The cards come in little paper lunch sacks, little crumpled up paper lunch sacks, and there are four in each one. So then when you get 10 of them, you can engoldenate them. And then any card you receive in your little card sack will be engoldenated, which you can trade in for more toots. But then there's also the unwanted cards.
Engoldenated.
Yeah, exactly.
You used to call that gilding, but now we engoldenate.
Just goldenate it. Yeah, yeah. It's great. And then you can convert your cards into turds, which you can use to buy cards you're missing. So you got the two currencies, which are toot coins and turds. And then those toot coins and turds, they're used later in a very secretive way to advance the story to the point where you're finding the secret ending. So there are other sorts of like hidden stuff throughout, which will give you unlocks.
My inner 9-year-old just loves everything about this.
And I did listen whenever I would play a song. I was, you know, sitting at the coffee shop and I would play through a song.
Yeah.
I would have to laugh after each song. I would just giggle. Just like, people don't know that I'm playing this game, but I would just giggle. I think I spent about probably total 10 hours, but I got it. Mm-hmm. I unlocked the secret ending and stuff. So let me just say, game mechanics, nothing new, nothing groundbreaking, but super solid and lots of fun. Because they don't really innovate on it, but I mean, I don't think that's the point. The point is coming up with something that's fun. And it definitely was that. It was so much fun. So the three ups, three downs, we'll go with three ups. Like I said, in the first part, it just feels like you're playing a rhythm game. It's a joke, but in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So funny, so witty. It's obvious they spent a lot of time on this, gave a lot of love to it. So great. One other up, song selection is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then another up is they've got a lot of different, like if you're not really good at rhythm games, they've got a lot of things in the settings that will make things a little bit easier for you and you can adjust, which is
right on.
Something that you think of as a joke game doesn't usually do that. It is a very well-crafted, top-to-bottom, amazing, fun game. Three downs. One of my downs is going to be a silly down. One of the songs I thought of that really should be in there was Casey and the Sunshine Band, That's the Way I Like It.
Oh, yeah.
That would be so much fun to play. That's not really a down. That's just more of a request for a song.
Maybe, yeah, for the next, yeah.
Next DLC.
Yeah.
I did go online and I requested, they've got a little part in Steam where you can request songs. So I did that.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really hard for me to come up with downs. I don't know what I would say that could be improved. There are parts in it that are supposed to be funny that I didn't find funny, where you have to click on things for like 100 times. You can turn those off so you don't have to do it. But it's like one of the things is just all you do is just click on something 100 times. I could have done without that.
That reminds me of something I saw today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was in one of the classrooms. You know, it was Friday, so it was like right at the end of the day, and a couple of kids were playing, had free time on the Chromebooks, and they're playing this video game where literally all it is like just click real fast.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing else going on in the game, just clicking. And I was like, oh, okay.
That may have been what they were making fun of in this game, too.
Yeah, probably. Because, yeah. Like, that must be it, because there are... But these guys were doing it. I don't... Yeah. Okay.
That is a genre. It is a clicker. I mean, that's what they call
just,
it.
Just clicking.
Yep, just clicking. All these things that I think of that are downs are just very, you know, they're not...
They're not deal breakers.
No, they're definitely not deal breakers. And maybe I'll try and come up with one for the third for the show notes, but right now I can't. I don't really think of anything other than just a couple of a little annoying mechanics. My time with Trombone Champ was amazing. I loved it. It was so much fun. So yeah. Highly recommend. Definitely worth checking out if you own a PC or a Mac. It's available on Steam. I'll put the link in the show notes. So that is my review of Trombone Champ. If you ever dreamed of being a tromboner, tooting.
My grandpa was a tromboner. Yeah. No.
He actually was, wasn't he?
He played a lot of musical instruments, and one of the ones he liked to play was a trombone.
Yeah, the trombone is an interesting instrument that's not like your other brass.
No.
That's what I've been up to. Let's get into the word.
Let us not equivocate.
Yes, let us not equivocate.
Get right down to it.
Let's get right down to it. I am going to read the definition. Oh, wow. You know, when I had Martin on for the show, Martin from Sweden.
Right, Martin, yeah.
I had this little translate thing so I could learn, and I just never changed it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking over here, and for equivocate, it's got these, I don't know how to say these things. Y-T-T-R-A, Yitrasig Traveldigd is one verb.
Yeah.
And Sig is another.
Ooh,
one.
I'm like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You know, I gotta open another tab in mine. Equivocate in Swedish.
Yes. translate to Swedish. They're not always like 100% solid, right? It's like any other sort of translation software.
Oh, yeah. But it's different looking words over here.
Yes.
Vara tvetydig.
Yes, lots of consonants. Yetrasig tvetydig.
I don't get that. I gotta look. I don't know what's going on here. Yeah. No, this one's got ifragasada. What is, who knows?
That doesn't sound very Swedish.
Well, if you look at it, it totally looks like some IKEA item. I'm not pronouncing it right. But it's got the little, you know, an umlaut over something and a little circle over an A. It's, you know, it totally looks like something that you could put next to your mom. I'm gonna stop.
An inexpensive furniture solution. That's what it could be.
It could be. Yes.
Anyway, so we'll go with Oxford equivocate.
Oxford.
Yes.
Okay.
Oxford. Verb equivocate is use ambiguous language so as to conceal the truth or avoid committing oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're aware of, she equivocated. You're more in tune with this word than I am, so please correct me when I make a mistake.
Let's go with in the spirit of exploration, because this is a kind of a tough word. You know, there's a couple of reasons why I like this word, and one of them is because I read a book that was all about equivocation in literature.
Oh, okay.
And in myths and stuff. There were a couple big things that it looked at, and one of them was like the oracle's prophecy for Oedipus was that he was going to kill his father and marry his mother. And the parents that he lived with at the time,
mm-hmm.
the people that brought him up, he's like, no, I love them. I can't do that. And he's like, I'm going to defy this prophecy and I'm going to leave town on his road out of, you know, he was going, I'm going somewhere totally different. And then there was a crossroads and then there was some jerk blocking the way and there's a little bit of road rage happened and he killed the dude. But he went into town and then solved the riddle of the Sphinx. And then they're like, oh, good. You get to marry the queen who lost her husband in some road rage incident we haven't solved yet. And then some guy pointed out later on, like, no, that was your actual father, and that's your mother. Yeah, that didn't work. Oedipus felt a lot real bad about that. But there was equivocation within the prophecy where, like, he thought it meant one thing, but it really meant another thing.
Right. It was kind of vague. It took a couple of suppositions into play.
Yeah, exactly. And, like your newspaper horoscopes are pretty good at.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Or, you know, the magic eight ball. Reply hazy. Try again later.
Try.
That's a. Like, yeah. How much should I buy the lottery ticket?
Try again later. The magic eight ball. Yes.
But some of the magic eight ball answers are definite and firm, and then some of them are just like
equivocation.
I don't want to tell you.
You're right.
They're magic eight ball equivocates.
What percentage of time do you think? What percentage of time does it equivocate? Probably about 33%. I think that's
33%. Yeah, at least 33.
At least 33.
If I had to put a number on it, 33 would be a number that I might say.
Okay.
And you see that I used imprecise language in that.
No, say
I just
it again.
Equivocated. Okay. If I had to put a number on it, 33 is a number that I might say.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Now I get
see
it.
See what I'm like? Yeah. I'm hedging it in several places so that it's like, okay, it sounds like I'm saying yes, 33%, but I'm just saying like 33, that's a number.
It is a number and it is a percentage and I could say it, but it sounds like you're being positive. Okay.
But if I'm wrong, well, no, I'm not wrong. If it turns out it's not 33%, I'd be like, yeah, I never said it was 33%. I said maybe that would be a word I could say, you know, and like that's one. Yeah, a kind of a-hole-ish way of equivocating.
a-hole-ish.
Another a-hole-ish. A-hole-ish.
Can we go back to Oedipus really quick before you get into
it? Yeah, go back to Oedipus, yeah.
There were no DNA tests back then? I mean, how does he really know?
Okay, this is how it was. There was an eyewitness. Because first of all,
there was a witness who saw him be born?
No. Well, you know, his parents were there. His mom was there, I'm pretty sure. But Yeah, but the born in the city of Thebes, and Laertes and Iocasta's parents, they went to the oracle first and said, "Oh, we want the prophecy for our son who's going to be the prince." That was where the prophecy was first uttered, where the oracle at Delphi said, "Oh, yeah, this child is going to kill his father and marry his mother." And they're like, "Oh," they're like, "We need to get rid of this baby." And so they got a guy to they said, "Take the baby out into the wilderness and kill it." And he's like, "This little baby, that's lame." And so instead of killing the baby, all right, he just couldn't do that. But he did nail its foot to something. So Oedipus is Greek for swollen foot.
Right.
And he nailed his foot to something and then took off. And then somebody else found the baby and then took the baby back to this other town. I forgot which one, but. And that's where he grew up, and the adoptive parents were wonderful. And then, somebody came through town and was like, "Oh, it's the swollen foot baby." And you got this prophecy about you, you're not going to like it. And then he's like, "I don't like it." And he left. It's also dramatic irony and cosmic irony are big in the old Greek theater.
Right.
But he went, back. And that's where he ran into his father on the crossroads. Something dumb like, "Move your chariot." "No, you move your chariot." And he's like, I'm sick of you, old man." Bam. And then turns out that was not the right old man to kill. But and then I think what it was is he goes back, he solves the riddle of the Sphinx, which because the Sphinx kind of had Thebes pretty much under control, and it was a really dire situation, and they got to get the Sphinx out of there. And so he solved and even the Sphinx's riddle itself is riddles are full of equivocations, words that mean one thing or another. And
oh gosh, yeah, by design.
And so the riddle of the Sphinx is, what walks upon four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three legs in the evening? Oh, it is man. Crawls as a baby, walks as an adult, and then needs a cane later on. And
right.
So for some reason, nobody in Thieves could figure that out. But this dramatic license. I think they'd already put the word out that, hey, if you can solve the riddle of the Sphinx, then you can marry the queen.
Right.
And, marry our newly widowed queen, who's, a bit of a cougar. It's still all right. But,
is that actually in the book? Bit of a cougar?
Yeah, I think bit of a cougar. I think so. I think that's exactly the word Sophocles used. Bit of a cougar. She's still, yeah. The deal with the Sphinx was if you don't solve the riddle, then the Sphinx kills you. But he did it. And then marries the queen, and then they have three kids.
Oh, okay. So that's also...
Yeah, exactly. And then at some point, the shepherd guy comes and says, "Oh, yeah, you're that baby that I put out there. Oh, that's your mom." And then you realize, that old guy I killed, that was my dad. And then he's the horror. And then he gouges his eyes out and goes wandering around. Really?
Seems to be kind of an extreme reaction.
Yeah, They're emotional people, the Greeks.
Here's the other thing, too. When I think of that whole story, I think of how people didn't seem to freak out about Luke and Leia being brother and sister after the fact. But now when people rewatch it, they go, "Whoa, dude, they're brother and sister, man." And they get all freaked out.
Well, that one little, they're flirting with each other and stuff.
But they don't know that.
That brings me to... I was going to go on about Macbeth, which I love Macbeth.
Okay, go for it.
It'll come back to Star Wars.
Okay.
But, so Macbeth is a fun thing because, I like Shakespeare because I'm an English nerd.
Right.
I'm a writerly guy. Why would I pick the word equivocate? Writerly.
Yeah.
But so equivocation, it is basically, there's a form of wordplay and Shakespeare was all over that.
Uh-huh.
But the Porter of Hellgate... This character that not only is it's the scene where Shakespeare invents the knock knock joke, but the this guy who's there's somebody knocking at the door, in the middle of the night, and he's the guy that has to answer the door, and he's just this old crusty weird guy, and He's like, you know, one of the times that he answers the door, he's like, "Faith, here's an equivocator that could swear in both the scales against either scale, who committed treason enough for God's sake, yet could not equivocate to heaven. Oh, come in, equivocator." So it's basically, you know, announcing somebody is like, "Oh, here's somebody who's, yeah, I don't know, he was kind of drunk." But the word equivocate comes in there. I mean, he also says, yeah, alcohol is a great provoker of three things: sleep, nose painting, and urine. But and he talks about how alcohol increases the desire but takes away the ability. So
right.
He's a funny character. I like him, but it reflects back to like another big thing that's cool. Macbeth gets a prophecy also. He goes to the weird sisters, you know, the three witches: bubble, bubble, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble and all that. "By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes." And then they turn around and Macbeth. It's like they know that this guy's up to bad stuff. And he comes up and then he's asking them, trying to see their advice on his plan to try to become king of Scotland. And so they give him a couple of pieces of things like, "Oh, you know, none of woman born shall harm Macbeth." That was one of the things they're like, "Oh, okay, cool. So nobody's going to kill me."
Right.
Nobody, because everybody's been born of a woman. And then the other one is like, "Macbeth shall never be vanquished until great Birnam Wood to high Dunsinane Hill shall come against him." So these both these things are like these big signs like, "Oh, my plan's going to work."
Right.
But by the end of the play, this guy Macduff, who sounds like a Simpsons character.
Right. The guy who made the beer.
He made the beer. I mean, Macduff beer. Duff beer, Macbeth, Macduff. But yeah, he doesn't like how, you know, him and Lady Macbeth happened to murder the king and take over the throne.
Not a big fan.
So he assembles an army to march on Dunsinane, which is the castle, and they cut down tree branches to use as camouflage so they can get closer to the castle before they realize, "Oh, there's an army coming at us."
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of to hide themselves. And somebody looks at it and is like, "Whoa, it looks like the Birnam Wood is marching to the castle." And it's like, "Oh no, they said that Macbeth will never be vanquished until this forest comes to the castle," which seems like a crazy thing, but here it is, it's happening. And it's like, "Oh, they meant that." And then the thing about Macduff is like, Macduff was from his mother's womb untimely ripped. He didn't go through a traditional vaginal birth. He was a C-section baby, an emergency delivery, and probably mom didn't survive because they didn't have the sanitary surgical situation back then. But anyway, but so like the whole plot of Macbeth hinges on these equivocations that come from the weird sisters.
Right.
Much like the whole plot of Star Wars kind of turns upon another equivocation, right?
Right.
Luke really has this big crisis about it because, like, you know, in the what I will call the first Star Wars movie, because that is my age, and what they call now Episode 4, that's the first Star Wars.
Right.
It was just called Star Wars. Now they're like, "No, it's called A New Hope." And I'm like,
I'm so old school. When I saw Star Wars, it was just called Star Wars.
Exactly. There was no, it's just Star Wars.
It's A New Hope.
That was not in the first print. That was, he added that in a bit later.
Right.
After, it's like, oh, they're giving me money to make a sequel. So let's see. Oh, that was Episode 4. And yeah, he started. But anyway, the thing is like, you know, where Luke finds Ben Kenobi, or Ben Kenobi finds Luke, and it's like, really, he's really Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he's talking like, "Oh yes, your father was a great Jedi." And it's like, "Oh, what? My father was a Jedi? What happened to him?" He's like,
"He was killed by
Darth Vader." Darth Vader killed your father. And, you know, it's like, "Whoa, what?" So he's got it in his idea. And then later Darth Vader, you know, in Episode 5, tells Luke that he's his father. And Luke's like, "No, that's not possible. Ben Kenobi wouldn't lie to me." And then the next movie, he sees the Force ghost of Ben Kenobi. He's like, "Dude, you told me Darth Vader killed my father." And he's like, "Well,
what I said was
the man that was your father was destroyed by Darth Vader." Like, so from a certain point of view, which might have just been a way of retconning. Like, was that really the intention? Actually,
I mean, whether or not it wasn't, it just came out perfect.
But also, the word Vader, that is
father.
It's very, like, I think it is literally Dutch for father. It's very close to the German for father. It was baked into his name to begin with. So, like, that's like, we have no call to call it a retcon. That was, yeah, pretty much always canon. But the sister aspect, that was a twist.
People were freaking out about that. Not during the time. I mean, I wasn't freaking out about it. I don't think anyone else was. It was just kind of like, ooh, okay.
We always knew that there were more sparks between Leia and Han.
More obvious.
Yeah, that time when in Empire where she gives Luke a kiss, it was just to make Han jealous and weird, so.
Well, but she does give him a kiss in the first, sorry, in A New Hope.
A New Hope. Unquote. Yeah, but it was like a...
Before they swing, for good luck.
Before the swing, it was for luck, but it was like, you know, it was like a...
It was a peck on the cheek? Wasn't like just...
It was like a, it was maybe like a peck on the lips, but it wasn't like a full on... But you know what? They didn't know who they were.
Right. Exactly. I think that is one of those things.
I mean, only one of them knew they were an orphan.
That's true.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember what weirdness happened in the... There was that Kenobi miniseries on the Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah. I watched it and was just kind of like, okay, well, I kind of... understand-ish, but...
I thought it was cool enough, and I'm like, well...
There's a game I have in my backlog, which is Jedi Survivor. There was Jedi Fallen Order, the gameplay, and that, you cross paths with Darth Vader in that.
Yeah.
You got the, what is it, the seven sisters, or nine sisters, or anything, but, well... There's an evil sort of...
Yeah, there's an evil sisterhood in the Star Wars
right.
thingy that I'm not... I don't, like, they're some kind of witches or something.
Exactly.
And I forgot what they're called, because I'm not as big a Star Wars nerd as I used to be, because there's just too much Star Wars now.
The universe is kind of too big.
I'm just like, I can't keep track of it, and...
That's why I try and enjoy the story for what it is, and if I want, yeah. if I'm curious about some of the backgrounds, I can go back and look it up. I just try and enjoy it for what the story is.
I'll watch new Star Wars stuff and I'll be like, I'll just take it as it comes and like either I like it or I don't. And I don't get all mad at George Lucas anymore or Disney.
Or anyone who takes on a project like Jedi Fallen Order where they're just adding. This game was so good and so well received that they made it a part of canon. So this main character that you are, Cal Kestis, is in the universe now because of how well made it was. Did you see any of the other movies, like the one that was about getting the plans?
Rogue One.
Rogue One.
Yeah, with Cassian Andor, that guy.
Yeah, and then you also had...
Yeah, I like that one.
Saw Gerrera, who's...
Saw Gerrera, yeah. Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually appears in Jedi Fallen Order in a really goofy way, which is... You're on an AT-AT on one of the, which is the Wookiee planet? It's not Kashyyyk, is it?
It is Kashyyyk.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're in an AT-AT on Kashyyyk. You have gotten in and taken care of all the stormtroopers or whatever in there. And then Saw Gerrera pops his head down from like on the windscreen. Like he's just looking down through the windscreen. It's just a silly way. It's just like, okay, that's kind of goofy. Why would he be up there? Goofy. But anyway.
Little cameo.
A cool sort of cameo where you don't fight Darth Vader at all. You just have to watch him create havoc.
Yeah. Vader gonna F some ass up, man.
Yeah, he is. He is. Like he does.
He's an angry dude.
So the one thing about that game, it was one of those things where they were under a time crunch.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that it did so well and that everyone loved it so much because they didn't get to finish it to the point where they wanted it to be finished. They wanted to do a lot of customizations and things like that with your version of Cal Kestis, right? So cosmetic stuff for you, and you've got this little droid that looks sort of like a bird crossed with a Viewmaster.
Oh, one of those. Yeah. I think I've seen some of those.
Part bird, part Viewmaster. Kind of like Bubo on the Clash of the Titans. But anyway.
Oh, right. Bubo. Yep. Getting back to the ancient Greek stuff. Yeah.
Tying it in. Tying it in there.
Tying it in. It's all tied in. Look, you're talking about a Star Wars video game. It's all, we did it.
Besides that whole Saw Gerrera thing that was kind of like eyebrow raising. One of the things that really bugged me is like, yeah, you can unlock these character customizations. And all they are is ponchos.
ponchos.
2 dozen ponchos. It's like, okay, yeah, a custom poncho. Great, I unlocked that. Just nothing but ponchos. All of the customizations you do for Cal Kestis are ponchos. That to me, the game was fabulous, but yay, you can customize your poncho.
I got a new poncho. Yeah, that team ran out of time. Yeah,
that's exactly what they said. They put a lot more effort into the customizations this time through, because like you can give Cal Kestis different facial hair, or they kind of overdid it this time. There's like, we didn't quite hit the mark on the ponchos, but we'll make it up to you this time. So there are customizations you can do for you and your droid. And
yeah,
I haven't gotten into it yet, but there is apparently a story involving Cal Kestis flirting with the dark side and some things going on, some betrayals. And so I'm kind of excited to play that, but I, you know, it's one of those things that's a lot of hours I have to give to it, but I'll definitely talk about it when I do play it. 'Cause the last one, for what it was an amazing experience and a great story. So
that's cool.
You get to go, the Darth Mauls, you get to go to their planet and pick up the ability to do the dual wielding there.
Yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi like cut Darth Maul in half. Yeah. Apparently he didn't stay dead. He came back.
Yeah. That was just a really anticlimactic moment. I wish there was more to that. I didn't want to see anything that was like, okay, so he jumps and cuts him in half. How? There needed to be a little bit more build up to make it a little more believable. I mean, maybe he's that brilliant. Anyway, let's not even go there. We can go down the rabbit hole.
Can we just talk about the fact that Ewan McGregor kept making lightsaber noises while they were filming stuff? And it was a big problem for the sound editing and for covering up the visuals. Ewan, you need it.
You just got to stop with a
like, I've been doing this since I was six. You do it. Yeah. Like, I was born to play this part.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was one of the problems they had with post-production, is getting all that covered up. Maybe that's why that fight with Darth Maul was not as long as it should have been.
You didn't see Liam Neeson doing that.
No.
Because no, Liam Neeson
was like,
he's a professional.
He's a professional. Yes, he's a real actor. And I think he was very frustrated by the whole experience, because like so much of it was like, let's figure out how to do things mostly digital. And yeah, no, the guy's not really here, but look at this tennis ball. And he's like,
I can't act to a tennis ball. I'm an actor.
He was just, I'm an actor. I will find you and I will kill you.
Right. Okay, so back to equivocate.
Let's see. Where are my notes? I got Magic 8 Ball, Horoscope, Star Wars. Oh, jeez. I hit it all. No. I remember now. I told you I was going to bring up a president from a different century.
Oh, okay.
You remember that... what was his name? That guy that was between the Bush presidents. Oh yeah, Clinton. Him. William Jefferson Clinton. He got into a little impeachment problem on account of lots of people, the Republicans. Newt Gingrich didn't like him. Remember Newt Gingrich?
Yes.
He had his contract for America, and yeah, he's
never trust a guy named Newt. That's all
Newt.
I'm saying.
He made America great again.
No, he did not.
Okay. Well, he made a contract for America. But also one of those things is he's determined to take Bill Clinton down a peg. But the impeachment didn't really happen until the end of his second term in office. But
right.
It was about the fact that there was an extramarital affair with one young lady who probably deserves not to get all the attention about it, but she can go on with her life now, right?
Right.
Yeah, in his impeachment, he said on the stand that, you know, what was it? The quote was like, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And so he was kind of equivocating.
Yeah.
In the sense that he was like, well, what I meant by sexual relations is I didn't mean a blowjob. That's different, right? And then he's like, well, I was underneath the stand, I was pointing at a different woman. And I did not have sexual relations with that woman. So it's kind of like fingers crossed and, you know.
Right.
So then they're like, no, you actually lied in front of Congress in your impeachment trial. He's like, but what I meant was, so our elected officials do get caught in equivocation sometimes. We're going to build a wall and we're going to make Mexico pay for it. Emotionally. Financially, we got to pay for it, but Mexico is going to pay for it with hurt feelings. I don't know. there's the stuff that's unsaid.
There must have been a reason why politics jumped in my head immediately, and I think both of these examples.
Yeah.
Equivocating, it's just deception. Is that what it is, or is it more nuanced than just deception?
I think there's a spectrum of equivocation. Like, you know, there is the, well, I don't want to commit to one thing, so I'm going to say this, just put some vague words in there, like,
right,
where I did with like, oh, that might be a thing I'd say, you know, like that's a very hedging your words. You're like, I don't really want to totally commit to this, but this is kind of what I think.
Right.
There's that kind of equivocation. And then there's the deliberately using some obscure terminology to like throw people off, or constructing sentences in a convoluted way.
Mm.
Because you don't want to be caught in a promise. You want to say something that sounds like a promise, but you want it to technically not be a promise. But.
Okay. I'm going to ask you if something that I like to say to people is me equivocating.
Uh-huh.
I used to just say it because it was goofy. But now I've found through trial and error that I can use it to gauge someone else's mood.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asks me, you know, like, go to the coffee shop and they go, how are you today? And then I'll say, I'm not unwell, thank you.
I'm not unwell.
and then if they're feeling good, they'll go, oh, that's great. And if they're not feeling good, they'll go, oh, I'm sorry.
There's that. You're like, I'm not going to commit to 100% anything, and we're open to a conversation.
Yeah. Is that equivocating?
I think that's playful equivocation, not malicious equivocation.
Right. Playful equivocation.
And I'll say, here's something that I would hear my dad say all the time when a choice about a couple things would come up, and, you know, he's asked, you know, what he wanted to do. He would just say, I feel strongly both ways.
Okay.
Very low level equivocation. It's just not, it's more non-committal, more like, hey, whatever.
It's the same thing as saying, I have no strong feelings one way or another, but it's saying it in a way that's more positive sounding.
More positive. Yeah, I feel strongly both ways.
Yeah.
It's better than outright ambivalence.
So equivocation in itself is not evil. It can be a way to deceive.
I don't think, it's...
This is all conjecture anyway, right? But I mean, how much of that do you think is people just not realizing what they're saying, and how much of it is deceptive and intentional? I think some people equivocate in day-to-day conversation.
Exactly. Like they'll say something will come out, and then the other person will, like, you know, say, oh, well, it sounds like you mean this, and like, oh, no. Yeah, I do think there's like that unintentional equivocation, like being not quite precise with your words.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the whole legal profession is based on
equivocations.
Equivocations, or ferreting them out and finding loopholes, because like every equivocation hides a loophole.
It's for making money.
Usually money is on the line, yeah, because that's a lot of law is about creating a framework within which people can make money.
You like to think that it's for justice, it's for clarity, it's for this, but I mean, it doesn't seem like that. It just seems like you're, why couldn't you ferret out the loopholes before you wrote the law?
Yeah.
So we don't get neck deep in political discussion. I was like, well, why did I think that? Because Congress, just looking at Congress, every Congress. What makes me think that they could possibly write something that is free from loopholes? That being said, some of them are put in there intentionally.
I would be like, I don't know if there are going to be any presidential debates this year, but if there are, like, let's say hypothetically, there is a debate between presidential candidates, either within the primary or after the primary is over during the That would be a time to observe how candidates respond to questions. Mm-hmm. And you will often see a bit of equivocation and maybe not directly answering the question. Sometimes even just saying something entirely different than what the question was about to begin with.
Well, that's more.
Which in your high school forensic debate class, that would score you no points.
Right. But... And now you can argue that people do it all the time. So you got to score me, whatever. I don't know.
Well, it's, I mean, you know,
we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of aliens.
But do you know what they're doing to the soil?
Do you know?
Do you know? A burrow owl lives in a hole in the ground.
That's why they call it a burrow owl anyway. Worcester kid looking up in the tree.
It's all about Stewart, the most perfect song for our times. Maybe not.
Equivocating, I think, it seems like it's rooted in, I don't know. I don't think equivocation is inherently evil, but it just seems,
no,
it's just like, if you're not committing to a statement,
yeah.
Why are you saying it?
Oh, because somebody's making you say something. That's why. Yeah.
Well, you can respond to it also by just not saying something. I mean, that could be your response, is just not say anything.
But yeah, that's like that, the whole word, like equivocation, like the equi part means like equal in the vocal, you know, mm-hmm. It could be, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't even say that, but I mean...
We didn't even go there. I'm like looking at the word like...
Because yes. We got right into it.
Like we didn't even go etymologically, but yeah, equivocation. It is that kind of thing. Like, well, the words could mean one thing or another thing. It's like...
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of using words with multiple meanings.
Intentional ambiguity.
Yes.
And, which in itself is kind of sounds like I'm equivocating.
Intentional ambiguity.
Or maybe if I say unintentional ambiguity.
I'm not a lawyer, but you know, in constitutional matters, there's like a couple different philosophical ways of looking at it. Is like, you know, are we looking at the semantics? Are we looking at like what the physical words mean? Or do we look at what those words mean at the time they were written down? And, you know, in the First Amendment, right? Is that where they have the separation of church and state?
Mm-hmm.
The Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Now, it has come to mean that there should be no religion within the government. You know, like religion and the government should be separate. But historically, what the actual words of it is, like, there shall be no established religion in the United States. They were like specifically talking about how the Church of England is the official religion of England.
Mm.
And the English monarch is the head of that church. And they're like, well, we don't have that. You can be any of these varieties of Protestant. And that had come from a history of the fact that, you know, in the 1600s, there was a civil war in England where a Protestant sect, the Puritans, pretty much ran out the king. Well, no, they actually decapitated the king of England. And
just like the Worcester kid.
Yeah, just like the Worcester kid. They found his head over by the popcorn concession.
Snow cones.
Snow cone concession. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was before he received the pamphlet from Pueblo, Colorado. But anyway.
Pueblo, Colorado. Yeah, remember the commercials where you could write to Pueblo, Colorado and you get a pamphlet that explains stuff?
Yeah.
I remember that you could write to Pueblo, Colorado to find out about what seeds grow in your area. What is this? And then you could get the one that says... Do you know? So what am I saying?
I'm sorry, I derailed you.
It's fun. And like, you know, I hope the dead milkmen remember us for adding that, you know, 25 cents to their Spotify royalties.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly.
By people who are like, I gotta listen to the song Stewart.
Yeah.
Find out what these guys are talking about.
Well, at first Bill Jr. He's the one who got his head pow.
Yeah, he was a daredevil.
Just like his old man. Anyway, we could probably do a whole show about the dead milkmen, but we're just about at our closing time here. So I want to bring up one last video game.
You
I don't
wanna
know if
get
I
me back
out.
And No, it's okay. You don't want to hear me talk about the Roundheads and the Cavaliers and about how the founders of the Constitution wanted to make sure that the government wasn't actively hunting down and killing members of a different sect of Christianity, like as had been happening in England for centuries.
Right.
But no, we just want to keep the church out of the schools. You know, you write this thing down, you realize, oh, there's lots of different ways to look at it. And where is the line? And personally, I will state, I'm ready to talk about a video game.
Yeah, just a little separation of church and state is such an ambiguous thing anyway.
It's an ambiguous thing. And like, if you look at the history, you're like, oh, yeah, this is what they're talking about. But yeah. If you look at how it gets applied, you're like, well, it's this. And then
yeah, it's not.
People are like, but no, I want to have... I feel strongly both ways.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree with that. Well, the one I wanted to touch on, there was a game called The Day Before, which came out towards the end of last year and was removed from the store 4 days later. Yeah. This game, The Day Before, was billed as a survival horror game that was supposed to be massively multiplayer. It was announced in January of 2021. The developer was Fantastic, published by Mytona. Wow, they even had a composer on the game. Great music and stuff. Anyway, so the game was announced. It had a trailer that they were calling a real breakthrough for the MMO survival genre. They were stating how the game would be different from other genres and how they, quote, reinvented everything from the in-game goals to the way we approach the quality of the game mechanics. These are all sounding to me like equivocations, right?
What are they saying? Yeah, exactly.
Then by May 2022, The Day Before, became the most wishlisted game on Steam. Are you familiar with the wishlisting concept?
Say, this is the one I want?
Yeah, essentially, you just say, hey, keep me informed about this game.
Keep me informed, yeah. Like, I hear this is happening. It's
Fantastic updated their website to say that they were an organization of both paid and unpaid volunteers.
Oh, paid and unpaid volunteers. Yeah.
Yeah. Full-time volunteers were paid. Unpaid volunteers were compensated with participation certificates and free codes. Okay. Then they released a statement to gaming news website Well Played saying, volunteering at Fantastic means that a person works willingly for a common cause. We consider all team members, including employees, volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just see this is just replete with all sorts of...
Yeah, the double meanings and the...
Yeah. January 2023, The Day Before page was pulled from Steam because there was a trademark issue. And they said because of that trademark issue, it had to be bumped back to November 2023.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a lot of time for a trademark thing, but I get it. It's the law and so on and so forth, right?
There's some back and forth, and yeah.
At this point, there had been extreme delays. Someone had discovered that the footage that they were showing, they were basically redressing footage from other games.
Mm.
Like, even down to the way the characters moved and the models and the perspectives and things. So,
okay.
So people started to get the idea that this seems like it was a scam sort of thing.
Like maybe there was never actually a game?
No, like maybe there wasn't.
But they were selling it anyway.
They were advertising for it. They were accused of having this being a scam, but then they responded, they quote unquote, we didn't take a penny from people, no crowdfunding, no pre-orders, no donations.
Uh-huh.
How do you make a game? Those are all forms.
Money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How are you making this game with no money? That's what it seems like.
You need to get money from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You need to pay your volunteers.
It's not just the volunteers. Sure, you got to pay for server time and whatever. You got to pay for computer stuff. Not like the computers are volunteering. Jeez.
Part of this trademark dispute stuff early on in 2023, apparently there was a calendar app called The Day Before.
That'll do it.
In response, right before they registered the trademark Day World as their new potential.
Oh, no.
But as it turns out, the Day Before would be released on Steam Early Access on the 7th of December, 2023. Still in the middle of trademark disputes and soliciting unpaid labor, as well as allegations of plagiarism through asset flipping, led to some calling the game overly ambitious and mismanaged. So all you need to do is just check out the footage as far as how this game turned out. I don't want to spoil it for you. There's just all sorts of weird bugs, like some of the multiplayer hubs. Your characters would just inflate like a parade balloon.
Ooh.
For no reason. It'd just be like, what's going on? When the game got shut down days later and they shut down the servers, developers stated the game's design changed on a whim based on the most popular game release over the course of development from the studio's founders, who absconded immediately after its release. They claimed that working conditions were harsh, included crunch, with the studio employing young programmers out of Eastern European countries with almost no pay. All these things, yeah. It's just like...
volunteers, yeah.
Yeah. Another one of these claims is the founders of Fantastic had controlled all aspects of the game's development, implementing, quote, a lot of stupid ideas, end quote, and threatening developers with dismissal if they objected. But that's the thing. You're dismissed from a game that you're making for free. I don't, you know, there's just a lot of logical leaps here. But
yeah,
if you want to treat and want to be frustrated about game design and an illustration of how not to do it, overpromising and under delivering the Day Before,
yeah,
just check it out before it all disappears. I just saw an article last week that said that for some reason the store page is back on Steam. No idea why, no response as to why it is, but it's kind of new Coke. I mean, it's like you're gonna no one's gonna want to touch it, even if you do.
New Coke.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts on the word equivocate?
There's got to be a way to tie it in with new Coke. New Coke. Yeah, well, the idea of new Coke. Remember new Coke?
Yes.
That was perhaps an equivocation itself. Was it? It was a marketing scheme.
Wasn't all it was that they would make it like they used to make it? The formula had changed gradually, and then they just went back to the old way they made it, and they called it the New Coke?
No. What happened with New Coke was it was when they wanted to switch from using cane sugar to high fructose corn syrup, which tastes a little bit different.
Okay.
But it's cheaper, a cheaper ingredient.
Right.
And they knew that people would object to a mild difference in the taste.
The quote unquote mild.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, now you can get Mexican Coke and have the sucrose, you know, the cane sugar Coke, and you can have the whatever, the high fructose corn syrup Coke, and you can say, like, yeah, they are a little bit different.
Right.
But yeah, you know, there's a noticeable difference. It's still sugar water you probably shouldn't drink. But yeah, the new Coke thing was they wanted to make this ingredient change, which would save them a lot of money, but they also knew there would be an objection to it if they shockingly went from one to another. So they created New Coke as a way to say, we're redesigning Coke. It's a new formula. And they made something that tasted more like Pepsi.
Right.
And then the Coke drinkers hated it. And so they're like, we're bringing back classic Coke.
Right.
And so they brought back, it was like the old Coke recipe, except for with the corn syrup instead of cane sugar. And then everybody was happy that classic Coke was back.
Right.
And it was just a marketing thing to ease over that changing one ingredient.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that whole thing was planned out like that? Is like,
yeah.
Okay, so we're okay. So
no, I actually I used to work with somebody who had worked in advertising in that era, and saw that the stencils for the printing of the new Coke stuff, he saw that they're made with really cheap materials, and he's like, these aren't going to last long. Right. And that was the tip off that, oh, this is not really going to be a lasting thing. They're actually, and they already had the classic Coke labels all designed.
Right.
They were just like, this is a way to trick people. They were like, we're going to make a big change and knowingly upset people, and then roll out the little change, and people will be grateful to have that.
Right. Okay. They also wouldn't be able to detect that there was a change in the first place, theoretically, because they were...
Theoretically, it would be like playing mind games with the American consumer.
Right.
But, yeah.
So essentially, when they said they brought classic Coke back, it wasn't actually the old recipe.
It was the old recipe with a change. New Coke was a new recipe. But classic Coke was
a new bad recipe.
The new bad recipe. It was the decoy recipe.
Okay. That's equivocating?
I don't know if that was equivocating, but I think maybe using the word classic, there was the equivocation. It's the classic Coke.
Yeah. Classic is the equivocation.
But it wasn't like the classic Coke, which...
Right.
Yeah. You know, back in the day had cocaine in it.
Is it the old the classic?
Yeah. It's a health tonic with cocaine to help you be energetic.
Did it work? I don't know. It's not that classic. That seems like it would have been a Saturday Night Live sort of parody, is the classic Coke going back to the cocaine in it. But so is that your final word?
I think that's my final word. Yeah. Coke classic. They equivocated on the classic part.
Okay.
And the new part. I don't know. Maybe new Coke was new.
Yeah.
New Coke was new, but they knew it was going to be old Coke.
This is what this whole discussion has taught me. Equivocate advertising and government.
Yeah.
That's just, yep. That's what it, that, there you those go. Are the two words that I think of. Maybe that's my closing thoughts.
We didn't even talk about the Super Bowl commercials. Boy.
Oh my gosh. Mayo.
Mayo. Mayo. Mayo. That's not what the cat's saying. Saying meow.
Mayo.
It is equivocating.
Yes.
Mayo. Yes. Could be mayo, could be meow. Yeah.
Could be. Could be. The could cat be. Is equivocating. Equivocating felines. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So on that note, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of the Too Vague podcast. I'm just going to just go right into the thank you for joining us instead of thanking you, because you're a regular now. So
I'm a regular.
Yeah. Do I need to thank you every time? Do you want me to? Because I do appreciate you being on the show.
I mean, I appreciate being on. It's fun.
Okay.
You can just
close the show.
Thank
and
each
fine?
Other.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we can be like, thank the audience. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do that.
Tell your friends. Click, subscribe, and all that.
Subscribe,
share.
Just listen to it and share it with someone if you like it. That's all I care about, you know?
Yeah.
So on that note,
if you don't like it, don't let us know. Yeah.
Don't. if you don't like it, don't tell us.
It's not going to change anything. Yeah.
No, it's not going to change anything. But anyway, thank you, audience, for joining us on this week's episode of the Too Vague podcast. My name is Ben.
My name's Andrew.
And we've been your hosts. Have a wonderful night. Bye.
Bye.